Good morning, Arizona homeowners. Welcome to hour number two of Rosie on the House. It's the 8 o'clock hour. It's the outdoor living hour. And as we go around back here, Mr. Jay Harper's out in the field, and he's already sweating. It's 8 o'clock in the morning, and he looks like he's been out here for hours.
Not sweating as bad as if you wait a few more hours, you're going to be this weekend and into early next week. We're going to have, even us native Arizonans would call it hot. when it's the one teens, it's just, there's no couch in it, it's hot. But, you know, the mornings aren't too bad, and get out and get your work done before it gets brutal. But make sure you're drinking plenty of water and got a good hat and some sunscreen, and make sure you're watering those plants, too.
Yeah, they're the ones that have to sit out there all day in this heat.
That's right. So this is, we've been harping on people to check those irrigation systems. And, man, if you've got any inconsistencies or parts of your system that aren't working quite right, you're probably going to discover it in the wrong fashion by about mid next week, because a day or two of over 115 degrees with a water system that's not functioning, or if you're not running it correctly, plants are going to get stressed.
And stress, they're droopy, they're wilty. How long can they go before they're too far to save?
Well, it depends on the plant. So that's a good reason to plant heat-tolerant, drought-resistant plants, is they can withstand periods of stress, high heat, lack of water, better than plants that aren't as adapted to our area. So if you've got young bedding plants, or maybe your garden vegetables like tomatoes and those things, they're probably, if they're wilted and they go another day, they're going to be damaged beyond the point of being able to recoup. So in some cases, it's just a matter of a few hours if they go past to that, what I call the point of no return, when the wilt is so heavy and then damage starts occurring because the tissue is completely dehydrated, it gets desiccated, it starts drying out, then there's no hydrating it any longer. The roots start to damage, the mechanisms that pump water out of the ground up into the leaves, the vascular system of the plant, so to speak, has been damaged to the point where it can't, it just doesn't work. So again, things, obviously vegetative things, herbal things, herbs, vegetable plants, soft annuals, they're going to be the first things to show up. Turf, grasses, you'll have brown spots in your lawn in just a matter of a day or two. They can't go that long. So you get into things like Mexican Bird of Paradise and Lantana and Bougainvilleas and those real heat-tolerant plants, they'll withstand a day or two of wilt and stress before they start to show any signs of damage.
Every summer we get calls from people that have got this tree and they've got a well and they're watering it with a hose and it's on it for 20 minutes and they can't understand why doing that every day the tree's not right. Tree's not surviving. How is every day not enough?
Well, it's all about how deep you're watering and how deep you're getting the water to penetrate into the soil. So it's kind of a 1-2-3, if you can think of it that way. So things like ground covers and annuals and bedding plants and tomatoes and garden plants, if you can get them wet a foot deep, or the soil to have moisture in it about a foot deep, then they'll go several days between waterings. If you've got regular landscape shrubs, vines, hedges, shrubbery, general shrubbery, 2 feet deep is generally adequate. And then trees, about 3 feet deep. So if you water a tree in a little well and you run the water, generally people that do that run it pretty fast, and we just kind of fill that well up. And if you've got 6 or 8 inches of standing water there before it starts to percolate down into the ground, you're probably only getting water down 6 inches to a foot deep. So about a third as deep as you need to. And that's the thing where people don't understand. It's not a matter of how fast you can fill that well up, but really about how much water you can put on the plant to get it totally wet. The entire canopy of the plant, whether it's a tomato plant or a Texas sage or a big mesquite tree, from tip to tip to the proper depth, and you will have a healthy plant, and it won't stress out at all, probably, in periods of high heat. Now, I always use the 110 degrees as my rule of thumb. When I've got my summer watering schedule figured out, when it goes above 110, I generally throw the schedule out. You just got to start watching them then. You may have the perfect water system and you're watering 3 feet deep and you're giving those plants a nice deep. They probably need an extra watering when we receive, especially when we have temperatures that exceed that for several days in a row.
We've got a great program this hour lined up. It's 1-888-767-4348. That's 1-888-ROSIE for you to join the conversation. You can text questions to 411-923 or email info@rosieonthehouse.com if you've got a question about plant or insect identification, which actually kind of rolls into one of the questions we got here this week from Susan in the 857, so somewhere in Tucson, Southern Arizona, is dealing with mosquitoes in their house, on the back porch. Most garden centers carry types of mosquito killers or repellents. What would be your plan of attack for her?
Well, first of all, probably try and figure out what the source of the mosquitoes is. So you might have some standing water, might have a water feature, a pond, a bird bath. Maybe you've got a wet spot in the grass that is staying wet because you have maybe a bad solenoid or a bad valve, so that's not shutting off all the way and you got kind of a wet spot. So those mosquitoes are breeding somewhere, and it may not be in your yard. It may be in the neighbor or behind you, or, you know, so maybe check around and ask around. Then there's lots of things that you can try, from planting things like basil and citronella and rosemary, some scented herbal kind of plants, which will do a pretty good job, lavender, of repelling mosquitoes in small areas. We just looked at a product the other day that our friends at Ewing Irrigation brought to us, and it's part of a low-voltage lighting system, and there's a little compartment that goes on that system, and you put mosquito repellent in it, and as it, you know, it, so it kind of emits some odor that is a repellent to the mosquitoes. Obviously, citronella candles people have used over the years, or tiki torches, those sorts of things. There's some different lotions you can put on yourself, spraying yourself down, all of those things. A fan, keep the air moving. There's a number of things that it takes a combination of all of those things to really be effective.
Now, another great question we received just now, Robert was listening. Obviously, the watering is very important, but what about fertilizing right now, especially for anything in bloom? In this stress situation, is it worth fertilizing or is it too hot to fertilize?
That's a great question because we get that all the time. People think it's too hot. Now, if your plant has gotten stressed and it's suffering and it's wilting and got burned leaves, you probably don't want to fertilize it right away. We want to correct the situation, get the watering system right, make sure the plant has recovered, and then we want to start feeding again. But a well-fertilized or well-nourished plant will also withstand periods of drought better and heat and stress better. So yes, this is generally when plants are the most active and growing. If you're looking for something that is more for blooming plants, then you want to pick something that's maybe higher in phosphorus, which is the middle number of our three numbers on every fertilizer. Every fertilizer has to have some type of guaranteed analysis. The first number is nitrogen, second is phosphorus, and the third is potassium or potash. That middle number is what generally is responsible for helping promote blooms within a plant. So a rose food would generally have a higher middle number than a first or a last number. Rose food's kind of a good catch-all for most blooming plants that we don't always have a bougainvillea food or a lantana food or something. Use some rose food. It'll work really well.
And for most homeowners, you're a fan of the granular over the liquid?
For most cases, yes, except for maybe pots, indoor plants, those types of things. And quite frankly, I don't know that I'm lazy, but maybe I'm forgetful. It's hard to remember to use liquid or soluble fertilizers as often as they need to be used. Granular fertilizers and or slower release fertilizers that you don't have to do as often, I think, are much more effective. They also give the plant a much longer, more even fertilizing than a fast, quick dose of nutrients like a liquid fertilizer does.
But in a case where somebody may have even forgot to put a granular on, can you use the liquid to give it a quick juice and then shortly after start with the granule to get it back up?
Great idea. To get it a boost, to give it a kickstart, some liquid is a great way to go, and then back it up behind it another week or two with a granular, a slow release, or especially an organic type fertilizer would work great.
Now, could we apply that same technique to a lawn? Is there a liquid lawn fertilizer you could go out there and spray and follow with a granular?
Well, there is. There are some liquid lawn foods. Actually, there's ones that come in a little deal that screw right on the end of your garden hose. And you can go out there and give them a good feeding. Sometimes those are good little touch-ups in between. But for lawns, I'm really a big fan of slower-release fertilizers because lawns are growing fast. You're cutting them all the time, pruning them. They're recovering. So they need that constant supply of nutrients there that an organic or a slow-release lawn food will supply. And summertime is really when, you know, our summer lawns, we grow lawns year-round here, but your Bermuda grasses, your summer or heat-tolerant lawns are growing like crazy, and the hotter it gets, the faster they grow. So they've got to be fertilized through the hot summer months.
And I've heard you never want to mow more than a third of the length of the grass at a time. If you're gone for a couple weeks, raise your blade up, cut it, wait a couple days, and cut it. You never want to do more than a third cutting at a time. Is that
good rule of thumb? If you take more than a third off, especially in hot weather, you're going to scalp the lawn, scald it. It's going to turn brown. That stresses it out, and it makes it harder for the lawn to recover.
And how much, for anyone that might be new, because I know we've covered this plenty, how many inches of Bermuda of water? Let me start that again. How many inches of water per week does the average Bermuda lawn need?
Well, somewhere between 2 and 4 inches. Two's kind of just an acceptable lawn. 4 inches is going to give you a pretty lush lawn. So got to get the tuna cans out there, measure your sprinkler output, and then do the math over the course of a 7-day period, somewhere in that 2 to 4 inch range.